Journalist Faye Flam interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on March 3, 2021, about his top gripes about how public health professionals are communicating COVID-19 risk. This is Segment 11, Standard Operating Procedure in an Emergency. For the other segments, the complete two-hour interview, or other content on coronavirus risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
In a nutshell, the Food and Drug Administration particularly, but the public health profession generally, and maybe this is part of follow the science, is, they have developed procedures which are grounded in following the science. And one of those procedures, for example, is don't rely on observational studies. You don't know anything until you've got a randomized control trial. In fact, you don't know anything until you've got a bunch of randomized control trials and a meta-analysis that tells you what you've learned from all those various randomized control trials with different methodologies. So that's a standard operating procedure in an effort to be right. In similar ways, the FDA has a very laborious, cautious procedure for deciding whether a medication or a vaccine is safe enough and effective enough to authorize, whether it's a full authorization, a license, or whether it's an emergency use authorization, which is, already a compromise in principle. The idea behind an emergency use authorization is in an emergency, you and I'm going to use the phrase on purpose, you cut some corners in an emergency. And corner cutting is not evil. Corner cutting is dangerous. And you have to think hard about which corners to cut and which corners you don't dare cut. But in an emergency, you cut some corners. You don't do the entire standard operating procedure. The FDA, and I think the public health profession in general, has insisted on standard operating procedure vis-a-vis the pandemic, in spite of its being the single worst public health crisis of the last century. The public health profession has said, let's not act as if we should do anything different because it's the worst crisis in a century. And I suspect that even Operation Warp Speed, which is the most vivid exception. I mean, we got new vaccines in less than a year, where no new vaccine has ever taken less than 4 years before. So we obviously did something unique because it was an emergency, but mostly we didn't cut corners. What we did is spend a fortune. We spent a lot of money doing things simultaneously that are normally done sequentially so that we could get them done quicker without doing them sloppier. That was the rhetoric, and there was a lot of truth to that. But in point of fact, we should have been cutting more corners, or at least a case can be made that we should have been cutting more corners. Whether that's about approving medications when the data are not obvious, but it's pretty clear that the downside is low, and it's not unlikely that the upside is high. If you've got to make medication that you're pretty sure doesn't do a lot of harm and it might do a lot of good, maybe in an emergency you ought to approve that. It's true about rolling out vaccines, and I think we could have rolled out vaccines in October rather than in December, and the FDA did things intentionally to slow that down, and that was partly to build confidence. Maybe it was partly to keep Trump from being elected, and it was partly because the FDA is deeply committed to standard operating procedure, and they wanted to be able to say they didn't cut any corners. They wanted to be able to say that these vaccines are every bit as safe and every bit as effective as they would have been if it weren't an emergency. So in order not to have to admit to cutting corners, they moved slower than they could have moved. Perhaps the biggest example of this right now Well, there are two that come to my mind. One is the fact that AstraZeneca vaccine has not yet been approved or even allowed to apply for an EUA in the United States. It's in use in England and in the UK. It's in use in the EU, in the European Union. It's in use in scores of countries, but it's not yet in the use in the United States because there were violations of standard operating procedure in their phase three trial, and the FDA said, do it over. So we don't have access to that vaccine. There's a factory in Baltimore that makes that vaccine, but we don't get to use it because AstraZeneca didn't, made some mistakes that were not compatible with standard operating procedure. Notwithstanding the fact that nobody really thinks the AstraZeneca vaccine is dangerous. Millions of Europeans and UK residents and people in other countries have received the vaccine. Another very good example is the first doses first concept. The Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine are two-dose vaccines, principally because their phase three trials tested a two-dose protocol. So we have good, strong data on how well two doses work. And we have crappy data on how well one dose works. That crappy data says one dose works almost as well as two doses, maybe 60% or 70% of as effective as two doses, which means that two people who got one dose each gives you way more total protection than one person who got two doses. And so I think the case is pretty strong in an emergency that the United States should have moved, as the United Kingdom has moved, as a number of the provinces of Canada have moved, as a number of governments around the world have moved, to a strategy of first doses first. Give everybody one dose. And, people are going to need a booster, no doubt about that. Cycle around with boosters after everybody has had one dose. Now, there are downsides to that, or at least there are possible downsides to that. You're not sure that one dose will last long enough to still be effective when you get around to the second dose. You're pretty sure, but you're not totally sure. You're not totally sure that one dose won't encourage the evolution of mutations, of new variants that are vaccine resistant. Maybe a partially vaccinated people are gonna yield vaccine-resistant viruses more frequently. So, I mean, it's not like there is no counter-argument. There is a counter-argument. But I think the strongest counter-argument is standard operating procedure says do what you tested. And, don't cut corners by judging based on prior information and observational data and partial testing. Don't use those things to say, it looks like this one will work even better because you didn't test it properly. You didn't follow standard operating procedure. Don't go there.
That's an interesting, because now we're dealing with uncertainty. So we're dealing with probabilities. And then of course, after the fact, if it goes well, people will assume that it was the right choice. And if it goes badly, they'll assume it was the wrong choice. But right, when you're pretty sure something is going to save more lives, but there's a chance it won't, then it seems like we're in a new territory here, trying to figure out which corners we can cut where we're taking a risk, but we'll probably save more lives by, say, giving more people the first dose before we use the limited supply on the second dose. But we don't
That's exactly right. The likely outcome is better. The worst case scenario is worse.
Right. And then that is a tough one. And it seems like the community is very divided on this.
It is tough and the community is divided, but the FDA isn't divided. And for the FDA, it isn't tough. The FDA has simply said, you don't approve a protocol you haven't tested.
And that's fine for ordinary situations. Not clear. It's fine for the pandemic situations.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, do you think that the answer is for the FDA to be more honest with us about about what they're doing, or do you think the FDA should be taking more risks?
I think both. I think the FDA should, the term of art in risk communication is share the dilemma. Mm-hmm. It should be telling us exactly what you and I just said, that, if we do first doses first, probably we will save this many lives. But there is a small chance that it'll backfire really badly, and we'll wish we hadn't done it. They should tell people that. That, to me, that's a no-brainer, that they should be candid about the dilemma. And then I think, since they are the regulator, the buck stops there. It's not an individual decision. It's a government decision which protocol to allow. I think they should at least allow first doses first. And maybe then it's up to states whether they prioritize first doses. Some states, including New York State, where I live, have already said, if the CDC and the FDA says it's okay, we're going to switch to first doses first. We're going to give all first doses until we run out of people who want a first dose, and then we'll cycle back with boosters. We'll do that if the feds tell us it's okay. So if I were the FDA, I would want to tell the state it's okay, but with candor that, you still might hesitate, New York State, because the worst case scenario is indeed worse.
Do you think that there's also a debate about to be had about whether, once the most vulnerable people are vaccinated, whether we should start sending our vaccines overseas to hotspots, because ultimately it'll save more lives and prevent, the emergence of even worse variants? That I have heard this argument that that instead of continuing to vaccinate less and less vulnerable people here, we should start going to, sending our vaccines out into the world, into places that are harder hit than we are.
I mean, in terms of how many lives will be saved, it's obvious that you can save more lives with very vulnerable people in developing countries than with much less vulnerable people in the United States. But, in those terms, there are many things you can do in developing countries that will save more lives than almost anything you do in the United States. And, it's like, okay, let's shut down our hospitals and work in developing countries, because our people are already healthier than they deserve. Nobody's going to take that attitude. To be perfectly candid, if that were U.S. policy, we wouldn't have spent the money we spent on Operation Warp Speed, and there wouldn't be vaccines today for the United States or developing countries.
I could see there could be a compromise, though, where we can start looking at the bigger picture and saying, we don't want to see worse variants emerge. We want to make sure that we're not going to continue, that we're going to see this disaster happening in other countries that's going to come back to bite us.
I agree with that. By the time you're mopping up in the United States, for example, by the time you're desperately trying to persuade vaccine reluctant people that they ought to get a vaccine, I think you can make a pretty good case that, it's a higher priority to export your surplus to countries that desperately need your surplus, rather than sitting on it while you try to persuade people to accept it here in the United States. So what they say on airplanes every time you fly, and I'm looking forward to doing that again. They say in an emergency, put on your own air mask, your own mask first.
Yes.
And then adjust the mask of vulnerable people who can't do it for themselves.
Right. Right.
And I think that's not crazy. And I similarly think that, the way you get developing countries protected the most is by not disrespecting the rich countries for prioritizing their own health. But at the point where even their own health is more endangered by people in other countries not being vaccinated than by their holdouts not being vaccinated, then the case is strong.
Yes.
If you can make the case to Americans that as Americans, you are no longer as endangered by you know, the handful of neighbors who have refused to get vaccinated than you are by the fact that developing countries are still in the middle of a horrible pandemic. That's, you know, and they keep exporting the pandemic to you, and they keep developing new variants that you need to get vaccinated against. For God's sake, if you want this to ever end, it's time to give, you know, to give them some vaccine. You, at the point where that is a sensible domestic benefit argument, it's not grounded in altruism, it's grounded in, you know, in an accurate judgment about your own risk, then you can sell it. Until then, I don't think you can sell it, and I think it's a mistake to try.